When we last studied, we finished up chapter 18. And chapter 18 ended with David finding out about the death of his son, Absalom. He was sent word by a fella named Cushai. Joab sent this man to deliver the message, and he gives him the message. The end of the chapter, you see David's response when he hears about the death of his son. It says he was much moved there in verse 33 and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son." He says, "I wish I had died instead of you." He's obviously grief-stricken. He's much moved, it says in verse 33, and he's weeping, which is the result of the grief that he feels on the inside for his son. But when you come to chapter 19 and verse 1, it says, "And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom." Now, hopefully you remember that Joab and his brother and another man had been put in charge of the followers of David, the soldiers. They had gone out, they had fought against the people who were following Absalom. They had gotten the victory, and obviously they're on their way back from that battle. And anyway, word gets to Joab that the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. And in verse 2 it says, "And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people." So obviously, word filters down throughout all of the army. Word was sent to Joab, and I don't know if somebody overheard what was said to Joab and they spread the word, or if Joab spread the word himself, I don't know. But it was sent to Joab, and then it filtered down through all of the people. So all of the people find out how David is responding to what has happened with Absalom. And instead of everybody continuing to have joy over the victory, it says that it was turned into mourning. So instead of having a time of celebration and excitement, it is now a time of mourning among all of the people. And they're mourning because David is grieving, because David is mourning. It says, "For the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son." So when they hear how David is responding, they then begin to grieve themselves. In verse 3 it says, "And the people gat them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle." It says the people gat them by stealth. That's when you're being very cautious and sly, and you're trying to go undetected. You might camouflage yourself or whatever means you would use depending on the situation, but you're trying to go undetected. So the idea is that the people are just trying to slip back into the city where David is at. They're not coming back dancing and shouting and celebrating over the victory because they know that David is very upset. So they try to just sneak back into the city. And the Bible says in verse 4, "But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice." Notice his grieving is demonstrated in different ways. Obviously, he's weeping, as we've said already. But he's not just keeping it all in. The Bible says he cried with a loud voice. So if there was anybody close to him at all, they could hear the grief that David was feeling. He cries out with a loud voice, "O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son." And understand, he's not putting on a show here. Sometimes people make a big to-do one way or the other, whether it be something seemingly positive or something negative, but they make a big to-do and it's just all show. It's not legitimate. They're just being pretentious, being feigned, they're being fake, and they're trying to attract attention to themselves. That's not what David's doing here. David truly is grief-stricken over his son. He is broken-hearted in the greatest way over what has happened with Absalom. And it's a strange thing to me I can't understand all of this with Absalom. I've tried to think about it from different perspectives. I don't understand David's reaction and his response, because if you think about it, already David has lost two other sons, right? Y'all remember he lost the baby that Bathsheba had, and then he lost another son. You remember that? And you don't find where David responded to either one of those deaths the way that he responded to Absalom's death. And I have some thoughts in my mind, but I don't know for sure why it was that he seemed to be so much more brokenhearted over Absalom than he was his other two. You could think about the baby, and maybe you could think about it from this perspective. He's thinking, okay, well, he was just a baby. He's all right. There's no problem. I'll see him again. The other son that died, maybe he felt the same way. Could it be that he's mourning so much for Absalom because he doesn't think that he'll see Absalom again? Maybe he's concerned about Absalom's spiritual condition, him dying in a condition where he would not be saved, so to speak. Could it be that? I don't know. I really don't. I just know that he responded completely differently to the death of Absalom than he did his other two sons. And I don't understand all that, but he is very, very tore up over what has happened here with Absalom. He's just really, really brokenhearted. And by the way, that's the third son now that's gone. Y'all remember what I told you about when Nathan confronted him, told him that little story, and he said he'll restore fourfold. And I told you that David was going to lose four children. Well, this is child number three here that he's lost. And he's very moved. He's very brokenhearted over this situation with Absalom. And from what I can see, Absalom, the baby obviously was not a bad person. I mean, it's a little baby. You know, what could a baby do that's so horrible? The other child that died, the other son that died, it doesn't say anything really bad about that son. Absalom was a bad son. Okay, he was a wicked man in a lot of ways, a bad person. And I have seen that, and maybe y'all have too, where you'll have several children in a family, and there'll be ones that are really good people, and they're Christian people, and they love the Lord. They don't really give their parents any trouble. They pretty well stay on the straight and narrow, just good people. And then you'll have a problem child. You know what I mean? There'll be one in the bunch that's just wicked. They just causing trouble all the time for the parents, in and out of jail, just making a mess, just a problem child. And what I have seen many, many times through the years is that the parents oftentimes will give more attention to that problem child than they do the ones that are good children. Have y'all noticed that? I've seen that many, many times where it seems like they'll just bend over backwards for that one that's a problem child, but they often take for granted, it seems anyway, that they take for granted the ones that are good children, that love them and are good to them. I know a lot of situations that are that way, and I don't necessarily understand all that. I know that oftentimes it breeds resentment and bad feelings in the heart of the kids that are good. They develop bitterness toward their parents because of it. And I don't understand all of it other than, and I'm just trying to give the benefit of the doubt here, other than maybe the parents are just thinking, okay, these over here, they're all right. I don't have to put so much emphasis on them because they're all right and I don't have to worry about them. But this one here is a mess, and I need to concentrate my efforts here to try to help this one get their life straightened out. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But I have seen that time and again, and you sort of, to me anyway, you sort of see that with David and Absalom. What's that? Prodigal son? Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's right. His brother got real upset, you know, the way the But it just seems to me that David is a lot more upset over Absalom than he was the other two children that died. But anyhow, verse number 5, it says, "And Joab came into the house to the king and said, Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines." So Joab comes in. He hears about it, sees the effect that it's had on the people. They're shamed. They feel humiliated to a certain extent. They're just trying to slip back in. They're not able to celebrate and rejoice. The king hadn't come out to meet them and congratulate them and thank them for what they did. So he goes in. He basically rebukes the king. He rebukes David for his actions and is just telling him he's not doing right in this. In verse 5, he continue, or 6, he continues on, "In that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends." To me, he's exaggerating it here. David didn't hate any of those people, okay? When he says, "In that thou lovest thine enemies," obviously he's talking about Absalom and the people that followed Absalom. "And hatest thy friends," he's talking about the ones that had been loyal to him and had continued to follow him, especially those that had put their lives on the line for him. But he's over-exaggerating it. You understand, David did not hate any one of those people that were his friends, right? He didn't do that. And so he's just going too far with it in what he's saying. And he goes on to say, "For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants." You're not going to pay any attention to princes, servants. It makes no difference. You're just going to concentrate on your son. "For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well." I don't believe that's how it would have been at all. Now, obviously, David didn't want Absalom to die. That's why he told those three men to deal gently with the fella, with the young man. He didn't want his son to die. I've never met a parent that wanted their child to die, no matter how bad that child was. I've never met a parent like that. A parent that was in their right mind anyway, okay, that was in their right mind. So I don't believe that for a minute, what he says here. I don't think David would have been happy if all his men had got killed and Absalom lived. I think Joab just taken a little too far. But he's trying to wake David up to help him understand that he needs to be more appreciative of the people that have followed him and been loyal and put their lives on the line and go to those people, or at least make himself available to those people and demonstrate his appreciation for what they've done, because those people did hazard their lives for David and his family. There's no doubt about it. And they deserve some appreciation and gratitude for what they did. And David is letting his grief here overwhelm him to the point that I think he's overlooking these other people. But here's a thing that I thought about. Joab comes in here and he's getting all over David for what he's done. David specifically told Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, those three men that he put over his army, "You deal gently with that young man." He commanded them that. And the Bible says that all of the people heard what he said to those men. Right? Y'all remember that? Well, when Absalom gets his hair hung in the tree and the mule walks on and leaves him, and somebody tells Joab about it, Joab, you remember, takes those three darts and goes over and sticks them in the heart of Absalom. And then his armor bearers gather around and they finish him off if he wasn't already dead. And then they throw him off in a pit and cover him up with rocks. He deliberately, willfully, intentionally disobeyed what his king told him to do. He did that intentionally. It wasn't that he did it in ignorance, didn't know what he was doing. He got specific orders from his king on how to handle that situation, and he didn't care what his king said. He went against his king and did what he wanted to do, and it did not matter to him what the king said. It was complete and utter disobedience on his part. And yet, knowing that, he had the audacity to come into the city and jump all over David like David was a terrible guy for how he responded. Now, should David have handled that situation a little better? I think he probably should have. I think he probably should have handled that thing a little bit different with regards to those people. But folks, think about it now. Joab is saying all this to David, knowing what he's just done to David's son, and that the reason why David is so grief-stricken really is Joab's fault, right? Because he's the one that killed him. It's really his fault that the boy is dead, the young man is dead. He knows that. He knows that he disobeyed his king, and yet he doesn't seem to be bothered by that at all. He comes in and sees clearly how David's not doing right and jumps all over him and feels justified in doing that. But there's no grief in his heart, no remorse in his heart over what he's just done to his king. Now, what you have there is a beautiful illustration of a good-for-nothing hypocrite is what you have. Just a low-down hypocrite. Somebody that gets on to other people for the sin and the problems in their life, but never sees the sin in their own life. And there's people like that all over. Unfortunately, our churches have a lot of people like that in them. Folk that have 20/20 vision when it comes to the sins in everybody else's life. And they feel like they can, you know, put them in their place and jump all over them, rebuke them, you're not doing right. What about what's in their heart and life? What about all the areas in their life where they're rebellious and stubborn and stiff-necked and they don't do what God tells them to do? And I tell you what I've noticed. Joab was kind of this way. I've noticed a lot of times these people that are so quick to jump on others for the things that they have in their life, they can't handle it when somebody rebukes them and puts them in their place. Somebody sit down with them, show them the Bible and say, well, look, this here's what's wrong in your life, and they'll blow up like a hot air balloon, blow up like a bullfrog. How dare you say something to me? That is a hypocrite is what that is. That is a self-righteous hypocrite who feels the need to rebuke others but cannot handle a rebuke. And you see it time and time again. One of my mom's brothers, my Uncle James, that passed away, he was kind of a prankster. He's always playing jokes on people all the time. And he just got great pleasure out of it. If he could scare you, pull one over on you, he got a lot of pleasure out of it. But you know what he couldn't do? He could not take it if you got one on him. He could pull something on you and just laugh and laugh and laugh, but if you got him, he'd get mad. Oh, he couldn't stand it. We say he could dish it out, but he couldn't take it, right? Well, that's how a lot of saved people are. They can dish rebukes out all the time, but they can't take them. And the way I feel about it, if you can't take it, don't be dishing none out. If you can't handle somebody putting you in your place for the sin in your life, keep your mouth shut. Don't go around jumping on other Christians and rebuking them and telling them what's wrong with them if you can't handle it when somebody does that to you. Because that's just a hypocrite's what that is. And that's what you see in Joab. He's getting all over David, and he just murdered. Do you hear me? He murdered the king's son. Because he's hanging there in a tree by the hair of his head. You know what he could have done? He didn't have to kill him, did he? It wasn't like it was self-defense. It wasn't like Absalom was about to kill David and it was all self-defense. He's hanging there helpless in a tree. He could have come over there and got him down and brought him back to his father just like David wanted. He murdered that man. Now here's a man guilty of murder and guilty of rebellion against his king, but he's going to come in there and jump all over David like he's some kind of good fella, see. He's a hypocrite is what he is. Verse number 7. Now therefore arise, go forth and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. He says, this is what you better do. He says, you better go out there and show those people some appreciation. You better do that, because if you don't, every one of them is going to turn their back on you. You're not going to have anybody to follow you. Now, he's laying us all out. He's over-exaggerating the thing, saying how it really wasn't. And then he's saying, look, I know what's going to happen. There may have been some that got put out with David over this situation, but the likelihood that every last one of them would have turned against David in this situation is highly unlikely, okay? He's just over-exaggerating everything. But he says, you need to go out, and you need to speak comfortably to them. If you don't, you're going to lose them all. They're going to all turn against you. And he says, that's going to be worse on you than all the bad stuff that's happened to you from the time that you were a youth until now. But notice here something I see in David, and I mentioned this before in a previous study, and to me this is one of the greatest attributes and qualities that you'll find in the Bible of David. It's a beautiful thing, one that all of us need to learn from. Look at verse 8. Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king thus sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. You remember, they fled to their tent when they saw what happened with Absalom. Y'all remember that? But when the king comes out, they hear about it, and they all come before him, and everything seems to be okay. Everything's smoothed over. But here's the thing that I see about David in this instance here, and you see it other places as well. He just gets rebuked by a fellow that's under him. You hear me? He's a king. Joab coming in there busting off like that, he could have just had Joab killed right then if he'd wanted to. He could just, hey, you're not going to talk to me that way. And that been the end of Joab. He's rebuked by a fellow under him that is not only under him in authority, but under him, in my opinion, in every way. Joab, in a lot of ways, is a sorry, worthless individual. He really is. He's just a sorry person in a lot of ways. Now, he was a great military mind, okay? He could fight and he could lead the battle and that kind of thing. But morally, spiritually, ethically, he's just a pitiful mess is what he is. So he's under David in a lot of ways. But he comes in there and rebukes David. David doesn't get mad with him. He doesn't say, you don't have the right to talk to me that way. You know what David did? He took the man's advice. And he got up and he went out and he met with the people. Got that situation smoothed over. You think back to that time when Nathan was sent to him. Remember that? When Nathan is sent to him about Bathsheba and Uriah, that thing. When he is confronted by Nathan and Nathan says, thou art the man. Do you remember how David reacted and responded to that? He responded in humility. He admitted that what he did was wrong. And it was right there that he started getting things straight between him and God. He didn't get mad with Nathan about it. The thing that I see about David that is so different from a lot of people in the Bible and outside of the Bible is that that man could take a rebuke. He could take it now. You're talking about somebody, you know, dishing out, not being able to take it. David was a man that could take it when somebody rebuked him for the wrong in his life. And his response, the majority of the time, was the right response. He accepts what is said, and he responds in the right way and does the right thing. And that is a great way to be. Because can we all be real and honest tonight? Every one of us in here, I'm talking from the pulpit to every human being in this building here tonight, we're all wrong about things, aren't we? There's not a perfect person in this building. And if there is somebody who thinks that, all you're doing is showing you're not perfect. There's nobody perfect in here. And all of us need a rebuke in our lives. All of us need it. The difference you find, you look at life, and because the ground is level when it comes to the matter of needing correction. We all need that throughout our life. What determines the outcome? You look at people's lives, and people do wrong. And sometimes when they do wrong and they're confronted about it, they just keep on going and things get worse. Some of them wind up dead. Just terrible things happen. Their life's all a mess. And then other people, they handle it right. They get straight. They get turned around. They get on track with the Lord. Everything's good. You know what makes the difference at the end of the day? As you look out and you got all these people that are just going down this bad road, messing their life up, these on the straight and narrow, that's doing right. It's not that this bunch over here was perfect. It's that this bunch over here, when they were rebuked, they handled it right. That's what makes the difference. All of us need correction. What determines how things are going to go is how we respond to the correction. If you respond the right way, the way David did, then things can be all right. But if you respond wrong, you get mad and you hard-hearted, stiff-necked, and I'm just going to do what I want to and go on down that path, bad things are going to happen. It's a wonderful thing to me to look at David's life and see that the times when he was confronted about stuff he did wrong, he responded the right way. He handled it right. It's a good thing to do. It's a great way to be. Look, verse number 9. We'll look at a couple of more verses and we'll stop. And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back?" Now, you had Israel, but then you had Judah, which is the tribe David was from. And these Israelites here in verse 9 and 10 are kind of fussing between themselves or among themselves. It says all the people were out of strife throughout all the tribes of Israel. They're thinking back saying, look at all this good stuff David did for us. And now he's fled, you know, on the run from Absalom, or was. But then they say, verse 10, hey, the fellow that we put over us, Absalom, he's dead and gone now. He's been killed in battle. Why is it that none of you have said anything about bringing the king back, about bringing David back? They're fussing about that. And then you see, and we're going to just stop here, verse 11 begins where David starts interacting with the people from Judah. And the reason he interacts with them is because those were his relatives. Literally, he was from that tribe. Those were his relatives. And we'll see when we study next time how all that plays out. And as you go on through the rest of this chapter, you're going to see some beautiful, beautiful examples of forgiveness demonstrated by David. And you talk about a beautiful picture of how the Lord is with us. You're going to see a lot of that in the way David was toward many of the people that had been against him in this situation. Any questions about what we looked at here tonight? Any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for coming and being here. Y'all will stand up. We'll be dismissed. Lord willing, we'll be back this weekend at our regular appointed time. Brother Randy, will you dismiss us, please?